Welcome to the Business Bookshelf podcast, where I interview business authors and talk about their newly released books. The aim is that if you listen to this podcast regularly, that you will get insight into a wide range of business topics from leadership through to innovation, culture, communication, and even mental health. Today's topic is mental health and is a huge issue in business today. People are suffering from burnout from managing work and home life. Some are feeling isolated working remotely, and a lot of us battle with self-esteem issues. Today, I interviewed Todd Nils Nyholm. Todd is a semantic therapist who, through personal experience, has discovered the undeniable relationship between mind and body. Todd is the author of Our Brain, Why Do You Trouble Me So Much? Happiness and balance can often feel just out of reach. While we strive to build the perfect home and enjoy our work and a thriving family, often the first sacrifice is our own heart and body. When you neglect your inner self, you'll settle for less reward and fulfillment in every aspect of your life. A helping hand is here to filter out the distractions and disorder causing your mind and health to suffer. So I talked to Todd about how life is experienced inside you. I talk about his healthy life ladder and also talk about how genuine life-affirming service to self and others builds health. So here we go. Enjoy the interview.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. Excited to talk to you.
It's fantastic to have you. I'm always really excited to speak to my guests. So the normal question, as you would have heard if you listen to any of my podcasts, is where am I speaking to you from today? Where do I find you?
Yeah, I live in Cheyenne, Wyoming now, so the least populated state in the U.S.
Wow.
Kind of in the West.
And have you been there your whole life, or have you moved there fairly recently?
So I grew up in Colorado, which is just one state down. I spent some time in Germany. I lived there for a while when I went to university, but the rest of the time I've been basically living here.
Okay, and what keeps you there? What do you love about living there?
No, it's been really helpful in terms of the methods that I'm building because it's quiet and peaceful. And so it's given me a lot of time on my own to really delve into myself and the methods that I wanted to use and meditative processes and working with clientele. That's been real easy here because it's kind of smaller. People tend to be kind of polite and you get to know everyone. And so Cheyenne is the capital city of Wyoming, but there's only like 58,000 people here or something. So.
Wow, that's amazing. Could you give us a little bit of an overview of your background? What led to writing the book? And we'll get onto the book in a few minutes, but maybe just introduce yourself to the listeners.
Sure. It was kind of a long journey getting here. A lot of it had to do with healing myself because I had some significant healing or health problems from when I was a kid. I had some pretty traumatic things in my background from when I was a kid. And then I got into learning about other kinds of healing methods because the MDs I was seeing, they weren't quite able to help me. They would help me a few things here and there. And it took me decades to find someone who could diagnose some of the illnesses that I had. And so that was only 4 or 5 years ago. And so I was looking at any way to keep myself going at the time because I was getting sicker as I went and I was struggling more. And so that led me into all kinds of things. If I could find something that was written about 4,000 years ago that might help my health, I learned it and started working on myself. And that led me into all kinds of directions. So I could learn the somatic therapy I do, and I'm using a number of methods to do that. I work with an acupuncturist, and so that led me into some interesting things. And I also got into martial arts and yoga. And so I learned a lot of things about that and different ways of working with your mind and your emotions. And that's kept me going up to this point. And putting all those things together, I kind of developed my own way about going through things and things that I wanted to help people address. And so I'm kind of on a mission to help people reduce their suffering and the things that they're struggling with. So sometimes in the clinic, that might be like shoulder pain, and I do that. But I'm also talking to people and figuring out what's bothering them sort of mentally or emotionally or existentially or all kinds of things. And so this book is the second book I've written, and it's a whole bunch of methods to help people do all those things I was just saying, kind of address who they are, where they're at, from sort of the inside out. So they get a sense of who they are and how they got there, and then work that way rather than the outside in, where society is sort of building a construct for you.
And you don't mention your illness in the book too. I mean, specifically, I don't think you actually name the disease or anything like that, but you do say, you know, you were sick in the book. What was the breakthrough? Yeah. What happened 4 years ago that caused this breakthrough to happen?
You know, I went to a different functional medicine doctor and I was getting sicker, and I had just gotten I had a surgery, and I got a couple infections from the surgery. And so I went to see him, and he did a bunch of tests, and he's like, well, I think I figured out what happened to you. I think you got these bug related diseases probably when you were 4 or 5. So Rocky Mountain spotted fever, Alternaria, which is a fungus, trench fever, a bunch of these weird infections that you can get from a bug, but they're hard to diagnose, and you wouldn't expect where I got them, but it weakens your immune system. So it makes you more compromised. You can pick up more and more infections. So by the time I met him 5 years ago, I had like 12 infections sitting in my body, gut parasites, a couple weird funguses, a number of tick related infections. But he's kind of a specialist in finding those things. So we did a bunch of testings. He kind of diagnosed it for me and laid out a plan. And he said, you know, this might take us a few years to get your body able to fight it off and to kill things off. And that was a combination of, you know, antibiotics and herbs and vitamins and all kinds of things, anything he could find to help me move through it. And I feel significantly better now than I ever have it. So I feel younger and stronger and sharper. I just turned 45 than when I was 10 or 12 or those kinds of things. So
that's amazing. That's incredible. Yeah. What a change in your life. That's amazing. And so Todd, we're talking about your book. You mentioned it, but you didn't mention the title. It's got an amazing title. Oh, Brain, Why Do You Trouble Me So Much? when I looked at that, I thought, oh, that's interesting. So what led you to writing it? And maybe can you give us a brief overview of the book?
Sure. And the title makes me laugh too, every time I look at it, which is probably what I was looking at, you know? And so it gives this healthy life ladder, which is 18 steps to kind of work through things that help you address some of the things that I think we would normally associate with brain function or emotions, you know, things that we're working on our inside. And so it kind of ladders up from one to the next. So it gives you kind of a path to walk through, to work through it on your own. And that was one of the things I really wanted to get, was something that was a little bit systematic, but principles rather than really specific, do these things. So they're broader and you could use them over time as you grow and you develop. And this book is meant to be kind of guiding principles from some other books I want to write. So I'd written a book about diet. I've already written the third and fourth books. And this one's meant to connect them all to give people an overview of a bunch of things that they can use to move themselves forward. So it's really big picture. I really tried to get as big and as broad as I could get and give something that people could use from today until, you know, we leave this world and go somewhere else, you know, whatever might happen at that time. So I wanted things that you could use now and you could use as you aged and grew. Because I work with a lot of people in the clinic that might be 96, 97, and they have a different thing that they want to work through than someone 5 or 10, you know, and so I tried to make it applicable for lots of people in different areas.
Sure.
And so I also put a guide at the book that's 26 principles or qualities for helping making decisions so that you make good decisions for the long term and not just the short term, because I think a lot of people struggle with that. You know, like if I do this right now, it might give me this little buzz now, but in 5 years, it might lead me astray over here or make me feel more dead in my life or leave me trapped somewhere. And so I tried to help people address that as well.
Great. We'll get into the health life ladder in a moment. And don't worry, I don't expect you to list every single rung in the life ladder. But maybe we can start with, you say that life is experienced inside you. And I feel that way as well. But when I saw that, I thought maybe it's just because I'm an introvert, that I'm not gregarious, that I'm not the extrovert type where I get my energies from other people. I get my energies from, you know, being isolated and solitary in a way. Do you think that's the way? Do you think life is experienced inside you by almost everybody? Or is it maybe do you think it could be divided into extroverts and introverts?
Well, I think fundamentally, if you're just to look at the way you're picking up data from the outside world, that's coming in through your senses, right? It goes into your eyes, you hear it through your ears, you taste it, you smell it, and then your brain picks up that information and builds a paradigm for you. So it's literally being experienced inside you. You're picking up information, and that goes through the belief system you have and the paradigm you have, and you're experiencing it, you know, say through your brain and through your senses, but you're still like, you're not directly experiencing what's going on outside you. There's a filter as it goes into you and you pick it up and then you take the information and build a picture or map from it. And so if you look at it that way, certainly introverts prefer more time alone and working on their own way. They're building their energy up when they're by themselves, right? And extroverts are getting it from other people, but there's still a function of it going inside them and then they're building something from that. And when you really watch people for a while, you notice that their belief system and the way they're picking up information really determines a lot of how they see things and the decisions they make. And if you can change it at the point of contact where it comes into you, you can really change your life experience by working from the inside out, whether you're an introvert or an extrovert. You know, maybe introverts tend to go there a little easier because we spend a little more time alone. We like it a little better, you know, than extroverts do. But it still works great if you consider that even when you're amongst other people, you have this point of contact where the information gets to you and you can change how you see the world right there.
Yeah, that's right. I think that's right as well. Although, you know, my wife would say, you know, what are you thinking about? And then I have to try and understand what I'm thinking about in order to tell her what I'm thinking about. But so Todd, the healthy life ladder, you said it, you know, it's quite a few rungs. I wonder maybe if you could just talk about it in general, because they have to buy your book. And by the way, we are talking to, or at least I am talking to Todd Niels Nahum. And his book is Oh Brain, Why Do You Trouble Me So Much? So what is the healthy life ladder? And maybe you can just tell us a few rungs, maybe, you know, one rung at the beginning and at the middle and at the end, or maybe that would work for you.
Sure. Let me just open it up and I'll find some of my favorites for you while we're talking. But ultimately, it's a series of principles to work through, and I can connect them lots of ways. So I really tried to pick the most broad principle I could and then build a whole system of methods to work with people so that they could improve their health. So in the book, there's big picture ones, but I also have a whole set of physical exercises and a whole set of mental exercises, emotional exercises, and energetic exercises that go with each one of the rungs. Even in my diet book, I have a rung for each part of the diet. And so it helps your mind kind of hold on to it, which is one of the things I was looking for, so you don't always have to carry the book around. So like there's one of the rungs in the book is the power of emotions. And I talk about being able to conduct your emotions like a symphony conductor would. So rather than suppressing them or letting them rule you, you're working with them and you're defining them and you're getting a sense of their strengths and when they might be useful. Because some people would say that anger is always bad, but it might save you in a bad situation and get you out of somewhere. So there's a time anger is really useful. There's a time where fear educates you. There's a time where exuberance is a great place to live, because a lot of people wouldn't even know how to define the word exuberance. And so you can go through the whole thing and sort of define emotions. And that's a great way to work with your life and change how you're experiencing it, so you can see how your emotions work. Because there's a lot of them. And we tend to think of like four or five most of the time, but there's dozens of them that people can work through. So that's one. Another one is discarding external programming, which is sort of helping get rid of or understand where you got your thought processes and your belief systems and your education and all that kind of thing. And so it kind of gives a little process for understanding it and then starting to think about how your brain was kind of programmed when you were young, before you were seven. So your parents say something, or your grandparents when you're two, and it goes in and you don't really have a chance to critically think about it. And so you're getting a bit of an external programming from the world. And when you're like 7 or 8, your brain starts to develop enough where you can kind of critically think. But by that time, you're already pretty well programmed to the whole like computer operating system for your brain. Yeah. And so one of the best things you can do, in my opinion, is see it. Just see where you got it, where it came from. Maybe your dad said, oh, we're blue collar guys, we don't do white collar work. But maybe you really want to go in a different direction. You're like, oh, no, it's kind of sitting in the back of your mind as a thought that isn't yours. Someone told it to you. It may be not true for you at all, but it may be for him. And he just kind of applied it to you. And if you can see it clearly, like, oh, no, I'm not, he is, and I can do something else, you know. And so there's a lot of interesting things like that, too.
Mm-hmm. So. I interviewed an author yesterday, and he was talking about being very successful, but coming from the wrong side of the tracks in Mississippi. And he was a family of like six, and he was the only one who escaped, and he became like a multimillionaire. And somehow he just broke the mold, and he decided to believe differently to the rest of his family. And to not listen to other people who are saying, you know, you've got to follow in your family's footsteps and be like your family. He purposely broke free. And it's always just amazing to me how some people do that and some people don't do that. But Todd, I wanted to ask you, before we get on to the alive and feeling dead, which I want to ask you a question about as well, emotions. Uh-huh. Now, can you, I know a lot of people have like extreme emotions and are very emotional. And I think a lot of people don't have emotions, and maybe it ties into your feeling alive and feeling dead thing that we were just about to go on to. What would you say to that?
Well, I think there's probably a couple of conversations, Willen. And one is if you're on a mood stabilizer, you know, it is going to narrow a little bit how up and down you go, and because it's meant to. It's because we're experiencing our emotions partly as a physical chemistry and then partly as like a mental construct. And I like to think about, like, if you have your mind, your emotions, and your body, you want to work all three with equal amount of attention. But in our society these days, we don't look at emotions much. Mostly what we do is sort of suppress them. Or for some people, they just totally control them and they're kind of run by them. And so we don't really talk about them very much. And when I was looking at some past cultures, they had what they called emotional hygiene. And so they would teach you about emotions and ways to feel them and what they were like so that you could perceive them differently. In some ways, we're taught to not experience them. We're taught away from them. We're taught, don't go there, just be logical. Don't work with
boys,
your
don't
emotions.
Cry.
Just, you know. Yeah, exactly. And men in particular, we're taught not to feel them and not to talk about them. And we don't talk about them with each other. Or maybe your friends make fun of you, or you might express something to your girlfriend and she makes fun of you. She's like, you're not supposed to do that. You're a guy. That happened to me numerous times, you know? Yeah. And so I think in some ways we've been taught away from it and we miss the power that's there, because they can be painful, you know, and they can run for years if you're not really addressing them in a proper way. And so some people are traumatized when they're kids and they'll sit in sort of those painful emotions their whole life. And there's lots of ways out of that. You know, good counselor, therapist, some of the somatic therapy is great for that. And you can work your way out of it. But a lot of us, we have our attention everywhere but our emotions. And so I think for a lot of people, the first step is go, okay, am I feeling an emotion? What is it? And probably you are. They're just so muted. It's so quiet. And some of them are so just calm almost, that, you know, they're not huge blips all over the place. Like, oh, I'm feeling kind of calm right now, or I'm, you know, lightly anxious, or maybe you're really worried, or maybe there's just a ton of like coloration within the emotions that we don't usually talk about. So I see it with a lot of people, you know, they can get to this place where they don't feel like they're experiencing them, or they're really, really quiet. They're still there. It's just your attention isn't really picking it up. And so it's going through your attention much faster. Then you're really perceiving it. And thoughts do that too. They're moving so quick. Most of the time we're missing them. Until you sit down and try to write them all out, you're like, wow, my mind is really fast. And emotions are even faster than that if you sit down and watch them a little bit. So for a lot of people, they're not feeling them. And another good way, if you don't feel them a lot, is to try to feel them in your body. How does your body feel? Are you feeling something weird in your gut? Is that from the food, or are you feeling a little bit worried?
From the cheese.
People tend to feel it. Yeah, it could be the cheese, right? So there's a lot of things that play with it, but it's a big conversation. You know, the very first book I wrote was about emotions, and I was like, ooh, I can't start with this. This has to be like book five. I got to make a stepladder for people to get to it, because it is so outside of our attention in our culture at this time. So,
are you an author and would like to launch your business or technology book to a global audience? The Business Bookshelf Podcast can run a virtual book launch for you. It'll include planning sessions with you, the 60-minute live event on LinkedIn, Facebook, and YouTube, up to 3 guests to appear and endorse your book, social media support and activation, prizes and giveaways, the edited event to share with people who couldn't make it, 3 social snippets to share on social media, and a dedicated episode of this podcast. To find out more, visit www.businessbookshelfpodcast.com. And if it's not for you, then tell others about it. Thank you. And Todd, you were getting on to one of my later questions, which is about feeling alive and feeling dead. And I was definitely going to ask you about that, because I experienced both at different times. And maybe it's tied to the emotional question that I just spoke to you about, you know, feeling alive and feeling dead. What do you mean by that? And, you know, how do you feel more alive? Everyone wants to feel more alive. Could you talk to us about that?
You bet. And I think this is a huge question for everybody, because the more alive you feel, the better you feel in general, right? Yeah. And I think most people feel more dead the more automatic they are. So the more things are just kind of progressing without them doing something or changing something or emoting, like using your emotions in some way or their mind, everything. They know what they're going to do when they get up. They know what they're going to eat. They know where they're going to go. They know what emotions they're going to feel when they go to the store. They know what their date is going to be like. They know, you know, and there's not much that changes even in themselves, because you could do all those same things and change how you appreciate it. And a lot of that is focused down on what you're doing with your attention. What are you conscious of as you go through things? And so going back to that thing we were talking about, life experienced in you, most people are throwing all their attention out into the outside world and they're not watching themselves. And one of the basic processes you can do to change all kinds of things for yourself is to take some of your attention all the time and put it on you. Mm-hmm. So I'm having this conversation with you and I'm talking to you, but I'm also like, what am I feeling in this moment? Am I feeling a little bit of excitement for talking to you, or am I feeling a little fear? And I'm doing those things at the same time. And that sort of doubles or triples my experience of this moment. It takes it and makes it much broader and bigger so that I can get more out of it. And I get a sense of how I'm feeling when I talk to you. What's my body doing? What's my mind running on? Am I thinking about what you're going to ask me three questions from now? And so I'm missing this moment. And so there's something really important about being in the moment, because if you're stuck in your logical sort of mind or in your past, your memory, you're going to miss what's going on now. And that'll tend to make you feel dead too, because life is happening in this little moment right now. And so if the more you can get yourself consciously and emotionally and mentally and physically here, the more you'll experience it, and it'll pick up your feeling of being alive over time. And so people, you know, they might feel really dead and they start playing with it, and it takes a little time, but over a while you're like, ooh, life's really starting to change for me here. Mm. I feel more alive. I feel more excited. I feel more energy in the sense of doing things, or maybe you feel it in your body. Your body feels better and you feel more alive that way. Mm. And if I could give everyone one thing, it was like the ability to feel more alive consciously. Because the more dead you feel, the more kind of bad decisions you make, or the more you'll go to substances that control your mood and your emotions in a negative way. You know, people get lost in drugs and alcohol and all kinds of things, trying to make themselves feel something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. So meditation, you obviously meditate quite a bit. Can you tell us how you meditate, how often you meditate, maybe just a bit of overview of meditation? What are the benefits of it to people listening?
Sure. Meditation is a really big concept. So people define it in a number of ways. There is a meditation teacher I heard define it as relaxation techniques. And I would say that's a piece to get to it. But it's a huge concept. And the way I tend to think about it, if I'm going to define it a little bit, is it's zeroing in on your own awareness and consciousness to the exclusion of things outside of you. And so your mind becomes calmer and calmer and calmer. And you get to the point where your thoughts just stop and your emotions calm down. It's another good way to figure out what your emotions are, because you stop all the input. And so I do it every day. I have a number of methods that, some that I were taught from yoga masters, some through some of my Kung Fu training. And then I have a whole series that I created on my own that work best for me. And it's one of the things I'm hoping to teach as I go through things, because I find them to be really powerful. I also like to add contemplations with meditation. And the way I would define that is you're doing something similar, but in your waking life. So when you're walking around, you have these processes that can change how you're experiencing the moment, change your awareness, and make you more focused on yourself and on this moment, so that your mind calms and your emotions calm and your body calms. And so you really get to experience life in a different way. Mm-hmm. A lot of people will tell me they can't do it. And I'm like, well, of course you can't yet. You need time to practice and spend some time on it. And maybe the technique you're using isn't great for you. Maybe you need a more complicated or a more simple one. So for instance, one of the Japanese ones is they'll tell you to just sit, and there's no other instruction, just sit. Sure. There's no other complicated things. Other ones are far more complicated, where they're like, okay, work through your body in this way, go through this arm, that arm, this leg, go up your spine, breathe in this way. Once you get there, then you just want to pay attention to how you feel. And that's another way people get at it. I think one of the best ways to start is to sit somewhere and just listening to something that's boring. Like maybe you have an air conditioner or a heater that's running, and just sit with your spine kind of straight, sit up, because that does change how your body functions, and just get lost in the sound and watch. Your mind will just go crazy for a while, because your mind wants to own your attention. And after a while, it'll start to calm down, and it'll calm down, and it'll calm down, and you'll experience life and yourself differently, which is one of the coolest things for me, especially if life is a little chaotic. You can sort of calm everything down. And there's hundreds, if not thousands, of techniques to get to it. And you got to find one that works really well for you. But that one I just said is really simple, and most people won't do it. But if you took 3 minutes and just listened to it and really kept putting your attention back, when it wants to move, because it will want to move, probably every 3 to 4 seconds, it'll want to go over here. And you'll be thinking about things you need to do later, and just bring it back. Don't get mad. Don't let any of that get don't let it rise your emotions so that you're worried about what you're doing, or you feel like you're failing at it. That's just part of the process. It's not you're not supposed to be able to just get it immediately unless you're some super being or something. It takes some time to work into it. So
yeah.
Very, very helpful for all kinds of things.
Well, maybe you could share that with me and the listeners. And I'm sure almost everyone listening to this podcast will meditate or have meditated or know about meditation. It's like hundreds of millions of people do it. But I can't, and I need to try it myself, but I can't help the feeling it's kind of a waste of time. So why do you get out of meditation? How does it improve your life?
So you know, I'm always coming back to this experience of life, right? Mm. How am I experiencing my moment right now? And one of the greatest things that meditation did for me was give me a tool to slow down my mind and emotions so I can get them to a standstill. Mm. And when you do that and you sit there for a little while, and that did not happen overnight. That was a long time for me to figure out how to get back to. Life became much bigger for me. I felt more alive. My emotions opened up for me. Yeah. Some of the things I put in my book, I really almost intuited and then worked with, and that worked great. And some of that comes from meditation. I think it opens up a whole nother set of your mind to you. So you can calm down part of your logical mind, and it opens up sort of a non-linear part of your mind, or a gestalt kind of part of your mind. And all of a sudden you get these inspirations, and your body feels different to you, and everything sort of slows down. So there's a whole nother part of you that becomes awake. And traditionally they talked about waking up, and I think it's part of that process. We make all kinds of things out of it now, but you become more you and less your mind. You become more you and less your emotions, and more you and less your programming. And you see all these things fall away, and you're like, oh, why was I so worried about that? Or why was I doing this thing over here? And you're like, oh, because my dad told me it was important when I was three, and the memory comes back up, which before meditation I couldn't get to. And so I think it really resets your whole experience of life. And that to me is huge. I don't know if there's anything more important than being able to do that. And meditation is one of the tools to get there, as is some of the contemplations I have. I like those a lot because you can do them while you're walking through a mall or talking to your friend. And I put a few of those methods in the book. So there's some ways to do it that are a little more, you know, fancy to that. But that thing I mentioned about having part of your attention inside of you, that really changes your experience of things too, because you're watching yourself as much as you're watching everyone else. You don't want to do it when you're driving at first, like don't drive yourself crazy. Yeah, sometimes you need to be absolutely focused on what you're doing outside of you. But as you play with it, it'll open up a whole part of life that can become like 50% of your experience. It's twice as big as it was before. And a lot of that came from meditation. A lot of that came from the contemplation. I'm just using an old term that some of the mystics used in terms of contemplation there. Yeah. But there's lots of ways to get at it. And finding the one that works for you, it really changes everything. And your health will change, and your body will change, and your mind changes. And yeah, it's a cool thing. At first, it can really get at you a bit because you're slowing down something that's been running you a little bit, which is your mind usually, or your emotions. And it slows down, and you get more control over it, and it kicks back a little bit, but eventually you just kind of integrate in a different way.
Yeah. The second last question I want to ask about your book, and just to remind the listeners that we're speaking about a book called Oh Brain, Why Do You Trouble Me So Much? And there'll be a link in the show notes where you can buy the book from Amazon, but you can buy it from anywhere really. But you write in the book, genuine life-affirming service to self and others builds health. And I mentioned it in my previous interview that I was listening to Moby. He's a musician. He does electronic music. And at one stage, he was all about himself. So he was all about getting more money and more houses and more fame and more whatever else. And then he went into excess with drugs and addictive substances and all sorts of things. And he found that people were telling him that he needed to, in order to stop, he needed to focus on others and do acts of service or be of service to others. And that's how he would be happy and find meaning. And he rebelled against it completely until he actually did it. And then that turned his life around. So he sold most of his belongings. And now he's very into vegan foods. And so he supports different charities and does events and all this kind of stuff and now is more of an outward focused person than an inward focused person in giving. So is that what you mean by what you wrote there about, life affirming service to self and others? So is that what you were meaning there?
Yeah, it's a big part of it, because one of the great things about service to others in a real genuine way, and I mean that not in the sense like you're trying to change their politics to get something out of them or whatever, but you're really just trying to help someone in a way that you can do it, is it takes you beyond yourself. Like it takes you a little bit out of yourself, like you mentioned, but it makes you go beyond yourself in ways that you wouldn't have thought. So there might be times you're like, oh, I think I can help this person. And you start helping him and you develop something in yourself that goes beyond what you could do before. And it kind of quiets your ego in the sense of I need to get everything and everything has to be about me and I need more money and I need more fame and all these things that are insatiable. And if you talk and you listen to a lot of famous people, they get to this point where there's an insatiable thing that they're trying to do and they become miserable chasing it. And one of the ways to slow that down is to try to actually be of service to someone else, which can be all kinds of things. It can be a nice word at the right time. It could be a handshake at the right time. It could be listening to someone at the right time. It doesn't have to be this wild thing where you fly across the world and you try to save the dinosaurs from extinction. I don't know, whatever thing that people get into, that's not really possible. What can you do right here, right now, for the people that are around you? And a lot of times it's something really simple. Maybe you're significant other just needs someone to listen to him for 5 minutes. And so you sit down and you genuinely listen to him. And after you do that for a while, you realize it takes you to a different place and it opens up a different world within you. It's also interesting because you start to look at your mirror neurons and what your brain is doing when you're helping other people and you see their face change. And someone's like, you helped me with something that no one else could ever help. It opens up a part of your brain for you that you didn't feel any other way. So you're like, oh, wow, that really made me smile. That person has been looking for help for 22 years. And I was finally able to help them with this problem that they had over here. It's a really interesting feeling that's different than anything you might do for yourself. And I've also noticed just helping people that way, it opens up a different energy source that a lot of people don't always have. It's like some part of you is built to kind of be part of a community. And so when you acknowledge some of that, it opens up some energetic doors where you feel more energetic and you have a little bit more resource to work with other people or for your own life. Because I also put in there, you got to do it for yourself too, because a lot of people who want to be of service, they end up cutting off their arm to help other people, you know, sort of metaphorically, they're hurting themselves. And that isn't useful. You can't really give what you don't have. Yes. It's just, you got to take care of yourself first, right?
Absolutely. So Todd, my last question before we get onto your website and you know what people can experience on your website is that a lot of people, and I believe that a human is made up of body, mind, and spirit. So you know, we've been speaking about mind or your brain, but where do you think spirit plays in this? Do you think it has a role? Do you believe that we are like tripartite beings with body, mind, and spirit? Or what is your feelings about that?
Yeah, I definitely think that we're something beyond our body, mind, emotions, all that. And we're organizing and we're working with those things as part of a complex that we have. This is another thing that meditation can help you experience. So you can get to the point where you feel totally separate from everything else that you have. You're experiencing life outside of those things, and it changes how your mind looks to you. And so all those things come together, and you as the spirit get to do things and work with your mind and your emotions and your body in that way. And I know a lot of people put mind and emotions or mind and body together. I tend to like to talk about them differently because we need more attention on emotions, I think, in general. But I do think you, what's listening to me right now, what's actually perceiving it, that's transcendent of all the material things that we tend to think about.
And maybe one more question. The best part of your book, I think, was the story where you went to the shopping center and you parked your car and you went in and then you came out another exit, or you turned left instead of right, and you encountered this man who was about to, you know, do something evil, and you intervened. And I was just like interested in that story because it's happened in not that story has happened in my life, but it seems like a lot of the times our steps are directed and guided. Because like, there's no reason why you should have not gone straight to your car where you parked there almost, you know, every time you went to the shopping center, and this time you went somewhere else. Do you feel that as well? Do you feel that your life is sometimes guided beyond you? You know, there's something else that's guiding your life. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I've absolutely experienced that probably hundreds of times now, where for some reason I felt or thought I needed to go left instead of right. And everything else I was supposed to do was on the right. And I had no idea why I wanted to go left. And I went left, and for some reason that helped me, or it helped someone else. Or when I looked where I was going to go to the right, I saw a car accident. And I was like, ooh, had I taken my normal path, I would have been right there at that time. Yeah. And it's literally happened to me hundreds of times. And I think the more sensitive you become to what's going on inside you, you feel a sort of guidance that sets up. And some of that's you. I think some of it's the deeper part of you, but some of it's maybe more than you. And that's a little bit of a tricky conversation to have, but like there's something that's kind of guiding and that knows a bit more than you do. And if you can listen to it and open up to that, it can lead to some really cool places. You know, most people kind of, they'll talk themselves out of it. It's like, oh, I feel like I should go left, but everything I need to do is right, so I'm going right. So they'll talk themselves out of it a little bit. And so there's a real art to feeling it a bit more. And being more open to it, because I think it's a bit more feeling sense than it is logic. But sometimes it's a vision, like in the sense that you see yourself going into this store and you're like, oh, I guess I'll go to Albertsons. I don't need any food or anything, but for some reason I should go over there. And then you meet someone who's interested in your book or something. And you're like, oh, well, that was interesting. How did I run into this person? Actually, that happened to me at the mall just last week. Someone was like, he just started asking me questions about entrepreneurship and about money. And just as I was walking through the mall, I had no idea why. And so I talked to him for a while. And then I could tell after a while, he's like, yeah, I don't feel like life is fulfilling at all. I don't know what to do. And I'm like, boy, I got a great book for you. I just happened to run into him, you know, and I had some of the answers he was looking for. And it just happened. And I doubt he really recognized that he asked someone who had thought about that, like as a obsession since he was a kid, and put it all into a book. So it just kind of works out in interesting ways.
That is amazing. Thank you, Todd. So your website is nitality.com, I won't spell it out now. People listening will need to go to this. Well, maybe I will. It's nitality, so nitality.com. I'll have the link in the show notes. What can people find if they go to your website, and how do people get hold of you if they want to contact you?
Yeah, so the website is where I'm trying to put everything. So I started a YouTube channel, and I have an Instagram and a Facebook, but it's all linked into the website itself to make it easy for people to find. Mm-hmm. I also link the podcast I do, like I'll link this one on there so that people can find cool podcasts and people that I've talked to over time. And then I'm building more and more content, these things that I've been talking about. So the books are kind of like a resting place. And then I want to make more videos and some classes and some courses to just teach some of the things we've been talking about in a little deeper way so that I can, in an ongoing way, kind of give it as much of as I can as I go through things in books and in videos and courses and any way that I can get information across that people can pick it up. So it'll house all of that at the website to make it simple to find.
And then you've got a contact page or tab where you can fill in your details and send a message if you want to reach out to you. Do you do speaking engagements as well and that type of thing?
I do. Yeah. And I enjoy doing that. And I really like getting a chance to talk to people. And I'd like to be able to do more of it in person again, now that the world's opening up a little bit more. You know, Zoom is great, but getting to talk to people directly and work with them directly, particularly because there's some cool physical things that I could teach people that are a little easier in person. Some of the meditation methods work great through your body.
And that one too. So in the next couple of weeks, I'm doing a design thinking workshop. And for the first time in 2 years, I'm doing it in person. So I suppose the world is changing and opening up, which is good. And the last thing is you got a Stay in Touch where you can put your email address and it says you got your latest articles, podcasts, offers, and more. So I encourage people to do that as well, is to go down to the bottom of your homepage and put your email address. If what we've been speaking about is interest to you, then please do that. Go to the website and sign up to receive this information. So thank you so much, Todd, for joining. I really, really appreciate it. And I loved your book, absolutely loved it. And I've interviewed 160 authors. And when I finish the podcast, eventually, at least half of them, I've got to go and actually read and study and delve. Because part of doing the podcast is that I get a week or 2 days sometimes to read the book. And then I rush through it. So I need to go back to your book and just go through it in much more detail. So thank you so much for it. I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me. It's my favorite thing to talk about, you know. So.
And just to remind everyone, we've been speaking to Todd Niels Nahum, and your book is Oh Brain, Why Do You Trouble Me So Much? It's been such a pleasure talking to you. Thank you very, very much. I hope you, the listener, found this as interesting and useful as I did. If you'd like to contact me, then please do. I've given Todd's details so you can get a hold of him. But my email is lance@ideastorm.co.za or thebusinessbookshelfpodcast.com. You can reach out to me on there. And you can subscribe to the podcast all different ways. If you have someone who really needs to listen to what Todd was speaking about, if they're in a difficult spot and they need a book to read, then share the podcast with them. That'll be absolutely fantastic. And so thank you so much. Until next time, next Sunday when I release the next episode, stay well, stay safe, and thank you. Bye-bye.